And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to Noon Show, with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, good morning, and you're very welcome along to the 9 to Noon Show here on Highland Radio. It is the start of another week. It feels a little bit like the end of summer. I don't want to say that out loud, but I see school buses on the road and I see the weather is going to get a little bit worse as the week wears on. But you know what? We had a good old summer and who's to say we won't get another blast in September. All right, busy households out there this morning, are there? Kids going back to school in August still doesn't settle with me. Doesn't feel right. It should be September. But anyway, that's all fine. Anything you want to talk about on the show today? We've got loads lined up for you. But of course, always welcome your contributions. 086 60 25 000. That's the WhatsApp and text number. You can give us a call to an 074 91 25 000 or email comments at highlandradio.com. And if you do have kids out of the house this morning and you get home and you have a bit of time to yourself, well, why not watch the show? We're on the YouTube app, so that's your smart TV, your Fire Stick or your mobile devices. We're streaming the show live for you to watch on Facebook as well and on the X platform. Right, let's start with the Derry People Donegal news. And it's the story of the most tragic incident, something that is impossible to put into words, really. And unfortunately, through different circumstances, there has been this wave. I don't know how to phrase it. I'm so conscious of not saying the wrong thing because I can't articulate what I'm feeling inside myself. But this, it's just tragedy after tragedy after tragedy, it would seem, particularly affecting young people across this county. And it's just really hard to articulate. It's very easy to understand in a way the sadness that's in some homes across our region this morning because of these recent tragedies that are incredibly difficult to even comprehend them happening. The story in the front of the Derry People Donegal News is about the funeral of 9-year-old Joey Forker, who tragically passed away in Dunloe on Friday evening. His funeral will take place on Thursday afternoon. The tragic incident, which involved machinery, happened in Meanmore on the outskirts of West Donegal town on Friday. Guardian Emergency Services responded to the incident at the Dunloe premises. The young boy was pronounced deceased at the scene. His body was removed to Letterkenny University Hospital, where a post-mortem examination was due to take place. An investigation has also been launched by the Health and Safety Authority, Gardaí confirmed. But he was clearly a most beautiful young, obviously young, but energetic young boy. Just reading some of the tributes to him, he was absolutely, obviously, clearly an amazing young lad. And unfortunately, through different circumstances, we've lost a lot of amazing young people in recent weeks. And I suppose, too, and I'm open to suggestion on this, a lot of people are trying to process it. I think particularly young people at this time, many encountering sort of death and dying for the first time of all different ages. I don't know if we have a role in maybe, you know, offering some advice or whatever in relation to that. But if you're out there and, you know, you think there is something that could be proactive and useful but sensitive, you know, let us know. If we have a role in, I don't know, offering information or advice or whatever it might be, we're already looking at that. But please, you know, engage with us, 086 60 25 000, because as well as the devastation in households and communities right across our county, then there's that effect that on young people, the peers of those who we've lost, and they're trying to sort of make it all make sense. And then we as parents, what do we do? How do we deal with it? What's the right thing to say? What's the wrong thing to say? What's the right level of support? And we're working on maybe doing some interviews to assist in that. But as I say, if you anything you want to sort of contribute to that, 086 60 25 000, or give us a call on 074 91 25 000. But as I say, and it's almost impossible to articulate, but I hope the families of those that have lost their loved ones understand how supportive we as a community are of them, and feel their pain too, not on any level that they are feeling the pain, but genuinely, I think we're all sort of feeling it, if that makes sense. As I say, it's hard to know what to say, but if you can assist in that, let us know, 086 60 25,000, because there is something that we need, I feel we need to be doing, that's proactive and helpful and sensitive. The Derry news this morning, the prior of Turnbacher, is that how you pronounce that? Oh, sorry, it's Turnbacher, my apologies. Father Stephen Quinn has appealed for community support to protect the retreat centre and the people who use it. His call followed the deliberate setting of fires in the grounds of the Derry building every night last week by groups of young people. In one incident, wood was piled around a tree and set alight, which resulted in the fire brigade being called by local councillor Gary Donnelly, who noticed the blaze. On to the Nationals now, and the Irish Times reports on Tusla, and it has a local interest here as well. There were delays assessing reports of possible abuse, neglect or mistreatment of children in County Donegal because of intractable staffing problems and burnout in Tusla, the Child and Family Agency and Internal Review found. While concerns reported to Tusla were screened within 24 hours, there were delays carrying out more throughout initial assessments of children, the review said. Well, maybe that's thorough. Staffing shortages meant a significant waiting list had built up in the area, which required an immediate response from management to address, it said. Tusla's service in County Donegal was under pressure, with social workers telling reviewers emergencies often pulled staff away from routine work assessing, lowering priority cases. The review said cases had not been allocated to social workers due to persistent staffing difficulties. Three out of five senior social workers posts were vacant, the team said. That's massive. This is Donegal, by the way. Tusla staff in County Donegal reported being burnt out and said they were constantly worrying about which member of their team would leave next, the review said. Staff spoke about feeling overwhelmed with their low workload, which some said made them feel useless and incompetent. Social workers were concerned for the well-being of their team members and the impact of the staff shortages on the services provided to children and families, the review said. Many said the full extent of the problem in the local services were masked because staff had been able to take on extra work. The review said assessments of children offered to Tusla in County Donegal were being delayed by intractable staffing difficulties, and the reviewers were not assured that cases reported to Tusla had been seen in a timely manner to protect the children involved. So what we're talking about here is reports of potential abuse, neglect or mistreatment of children. And because Tusla services are so understaffed in Donegal, the staff themselves burnt out. They're concerned that children aren't being seen when they need to be seen. The service had a significant waiting list that requires increased management and oversight to ensure that those most in need are prioritised, it said. The review, which was carried out by Tusla Internal Quality and Insurances Inspections, was completed in November 2023, and it found 79 cases had been passed between different parts of Tusla's services before ending up on a waiting list. That's 79 cases. If that's something you have an insight into, maybe you are a former member of staff and you think that speaking out at this time might assist your former colleagues or recruitment into the future, or maybe you're a family affected by that, please let us know on 086 60 25,000, or you can reach out to me privately on my social media if that suited you better. The Irish Daily Mail this morning, a senior Lebanese intelligence officer has been accused of obstructing the investigation into the murder of Donegal soldier Sean Rooney. Israel Defence Forces, that's the IDF, spokesman Colonel Avichai Ardrey claimed a senior Lebanese army officer collaborated with Hezbollah to cover up the attack, which he attributed to terrorist elements. However, the Lebanese army strongly denied the allegations. The claim comes as the UN Security Council meets today to vote on whether or not to continue its United Nations interim force in the Lebanon. It's a peacekeeping mission, of course. The United States and Israel don't want them there. I'm not sure of the veracity of the IDF comments in relation to the death of Private Sean Rooney, but I thought it obviously important to mention. The price of rent continues to go up and up and up, and many of you know this, and many of you are feeling this. Rents are the lowest in Donegal, but that doesn't tell the whole story, of course, because, you know, our disposable income, our average wage are also among some of the lowest in the country. But rents climbed by an average 1.6% in the second quarter of the year, with the national monthly average now €2,055 per month. Can you imagine paying rent €2,055? The average rent around Donegal is €1,200, but that means some are paying €1,500, €1,600. And others are maybe paying €800 or €900, dependent on the quality of the accommodation. But €2,055, and that doesn't actually, if you're able to pay that for 2 years, my understanding is that doesn't actually benefit you in terms of your ability to pay a mortgage. So say, for instance, obviously, you'd have to have an awful lot of money to be paying €2,000 rent per month, but also saving for a mortgage. Surely paying rent in this country, and it would be a significant move by the government, should count towards your ability to pay a mortgage as well, you know, your ability to pay high rents. Well, according to the latest quarterly rental report by daft.ie, the cost of renting jumped for the 18th consecutive quarter. The average open market rent nationwide between April and June was $2,055 per month, up from a low of just $765 per month in 2011, and 51% higher than before the outbreak of COVID-19. And I think, too, there is obviously additional funds on top of rent as well that perhaps is not being counted in this survey in counties like Donegal, for that matter. But significant increases and a significant amount of money for anyone wishing to get out onto their own. £1,200, the average rent here in Donegal. Varying reports on the significance of new DNA testing in relation to the Sophie Tuscan de Plantier case. Some papers are saying that this new way of drawing DNA from this case is a game changer, and they'll know who's responsible in weeks. I don't buy that myself. Others suggesting that it could be indicative. But anyway, I'll read from the Mirror, who are taking a more cautious approach. Gardaí are awaiting on results of a high-tech DNA test that could finally solve the mystery of who murdered Sophie Tuscan de Plantier, it's emerged. But sources have stressed Gardaí are still awaiting word on any findings from the tests, and there's been no dramatic breakthrough. A member of Sophie's family last night told the paper he was cautiously optimistic over the latest development in the long-running probe. The French filmmaker, 39, was battered to death outside her holiday home near Skull in West Cork in December 1996, and reports over the weekend claimed investigators had found new DNA samples from the scene, which are likely to belong to the killer who murdered Miss de Plantier with a rock. So it's a new system of extracting and sort of almost like rebuilding DNA. So it's solved cases in the United States, a case very similar, in fact, to that case from County Cork. Irish punters are being forced to fork out huge excise costs for booze compared to the rest of the EU. This is in The Sun. New data shows taxes make up 27 to 29% of every drink sold in a pub or restaurant. And research commissioned by the Drinks Industry Group Ireland and compiled by DCU economist Anthony Foley shows Irish consumers pay 11 times more excise for beer than Germans, and hand over 80 times more excise on wine than the French. So do you believe excise should be dropped here? Would you like to see alcohol more affordable? Or is the cost of booze here maybe addressing historic overdrinking? What do you think? Would you like to see booze cheaper? Let me know. 086 60 25,000, or perhaps you like it at the level that it's at. And finally in The Star, the government has promised it will prevent illegal immigrants getting access to social houses by making habitual residency in Ireland a requirement. A new law is to be published in the autumn and will be presented to the Dáil in the coming months. It means in future any new applicants for social housing or the HAP, the housing assistant payment, must be habitual residents here. This is currently not part of the criteria as part of the housing assessment process, and it has caused huge anger amongst voters. You will have seen images and commentary about illegal immigrants, as they're described in the paper, getting a social home in an area where others have been waiting for years and years and years. Well, the move is being opposed by the Human Rights and Equality Commission, which claims the change in law will result in more vulnerable people being made homeless. It is particularly worried about the plight of the Roma and travelling communities. The plan to change the law was revealed by Housing Minister James Brown in reply to a parliamentary question on the issue from Aintu leader Pádraig Tobin. And in fairness, and Aintu often only get mentioned, but they're responsible effectively for two lead stories, Aintu, because it is they that made inquiries as it related to breast check targets, which is a top story today. And they also made the inquiries, which has led to clarity on the story of illegal immigrants receiving social housing. So in fairness, you know, they are seemingly digging into things that are important to people. There's quite a bit of a conversation at the moment, and we might touch on this, on student accommodation scams that are going around the place. Just in case you're rushing down to look at accommodation, how that works is often a individual will show an apartment to five or six people, or flag an apartment to five or six people, could be more, get deposits off them all and then disappear. So really keep an eye out for that. Go down and check the accommodation if you can, even though it can often be a trek. But there's other scams going about all the while as well, especially with a load of big events, be it concerts or football matches. And Kyle Leeper has been the victim of one of these and is speaking out, Kyle, to try and advise others and help others and avoid others going through what you went through.
Yeah, that's right, Greg. How are you getting on?
Good, Kyle. Now, tell us the story.
It was the Saturday before the All-Ireland final with Donegal and Kerry. And I'd gone and done deal. We were looking for tickets and we couldn't really find any. So I went and done deal and I'd found a pair being sold. And I'd messaged this fella on WhatsApp. And everything seemed legit. You know, he had sent on his ID. And we were talking for a good while now. And just seemed like a genuine seller. Like, there was no red flags or anything. And I ended up selling him €280. And the money had actually got froze. It was through Revolut now. And the money got froze. So he said he would send on the tickets regardless. And just he had asked me for ID and proof of my address. So if anything came back that the money didn't go through, he could, you know, get in contact with the garage or, you know, going down that line. So I said, yeah, you know, that was fair enough. If he was going to trust me, I'd trust him, you know, that kind of way. And I'd sent on my ID and proof of address. And I didn't hear a word from him then after that. And I kind of realized, it kind of clicked then to that, you know, something wasn't right at this stage.
The tickets, and, you never got the tickets. The tickets didn't exist.
I never got the tickets, though. No.
Right. And did you lose the 280?
I lost that too in the end up. Yeah. So did.
And that's really only the start of the nightmare. Because if it was isolated to that, you would say, look, we all make a mistake. I'll have to take the hit. But
I'd paid double or triple nearly, you know, just to. You know, not have given away my ID at this stage. But
And this is the key part of this, in good faith, because there was this sort of trust in inverted commas built up between both parties. Him receiving your ID, that's where this story takes another turn.
That's it. Someone got in contact with me. It was from Mullingar Garda Station on Saturday morning and, Saturday evening. And they kind of just explained that someone had got scammed over my name. And I'd explained the whole story. My heart kind of dropped. And I explained the whole story of me getting done and me sending on my ID. So that kind of died down. But I started getting a load of messages then online from people that had got scammed as well. And I just kind of started getting out of hand. So we went back down to the Garda station yesterday. And we can explain, but at this stage, there's kind of nothing that can be really done. They just kind of said, you know, to cancel your passport and just can try and get word out there. And that's kind of what I'm trying to do.
Yeah,
you know,
of
get
course.
The word out there. If you're in contact with anyone under the name of, you know, Kyle Leeper for tickets, that's not, even though everything seems 100%, and he has, you know, a photo of my passport and he has proof of, you know, my address and all this here, that it's not me.
Yeah, and that there's a double side to this, obviously, because he's doing this in your name, but also, you know, you're having to explain over and over again that you've nothing to do with this. You're still the victim. But he can, and this is how it works, I suppose, he might, or she might, I don't know if it's a boy or a girl, but, you know, send your ID to someone for reassurance, and they might send their ID to him for reassurance. Next thing, yours isn't used, and the next victim's is, and it kind of keeps going, and it insulates the scammer from sort of ever being identified. It's a crazy situation, so it will.
Yeah, no, and not, even the phone numbers and all are being switched nearly every, you know, every turnaround. No, especially this weekend with Electric Picnic coming up, and there could be a lot of things in between that could have been sold under my name, and I'm sure there'll be things in the future that are going to be sold under my name. So, you know, it's just trying to get word out there that that's not me in a way, I suppose.
Yeah, yeah, of course, because this is it. You're still a victim of this scam. Okay.
It's my name under it, you know. Yeah, it's my name being black and like.
Yeah, and you know, who's to say you won't get a call from, you know, Cork Garda Station in 2 days, or you know what I mean?
Yeah,
you just don't know.
Yeah.
You're having to go through this over and over again. Look, it's an easy mistake to make, and as I say, he'll probably acquire someone else's ID by using your ID to sort of seem legit to them, and on it goes, and you can see how it daisy chains, and he makes, or she makes, a ton of money, and you know, you're having to deal with the consequences. All right, Kyle, listen, it's good to get it out there. If you see anything associated with the name Kyle Leeper, Kyle is also a victim of this scammer, and don't engage. Thanks very much for getting helping us get the word out there as well.
Thank you.
All right, take care, Kyle Leeper. A Donegal lad, obviously, who continues to be the victim of this scammer. And obviously, you know, you might say, you shouldn't take photos of your ID and send them on, but you're trying to get your tickets at the biggest game in a long time, and the other person is very expert at sort of creating this trust system. You know, that's what they do. They're professionals at it. So Kyle Leeper, he's not selling anything at the moment anyway, so keep your eye out there. Apparently the water's off again in Tuban, previously off from 9 p.m. Saturday to 9 p.m. Sunday. I reported it, says a listener, at 3:30 a.m, but they won't escalate to an engineer unless they have got 5 reports. Yeah, we've had this before. This is why it's really important that you don't rely necessarily on a neighbour to report something, or presume someone else has, because they do require a certain amount of reports before they will actually action on it. I'll just check their socials here to see if they've posted anything. No, but they've got news of water conservations. Water conservation restrictions may affect supply to Umla, Torra, Downings, Derry, Castle, Dewey, Meva, Kinalargi, Melmore and surrounding areas from 11:30 p.m. That was last night, until 7 a.m. this morning. That's an ongoing thing. They're doing that every night. Reports to a burst water main may affect supply to Inch Island and surrounds. I think that was resolved last night, or at least they say. So I'm not sure if that pulls in any of our listeners' complaints there. But anyway, a caller says, I think Tusla would have less issues if they weren't looking for master's degrees and several years' experience in social work when posting jobs. Maybe start doing some on-the-job training for people who can pass vetting rather than holding out for a degree holders, most of which they've probably hired at this point, or have left the country because they didn't. Yeah, in the I'm not sure. You're probably correct, and you might have more of an insight in this into this than I have. But I suppose in the area of child protection, it's really important, I suppose, that people are best qualified. But maybe you're right, Greg. We're nearly always done first years. We've nearly always done first years back in August. I remember my first day in St. Eunan's 20 years ago, now being the 26th of August. Okay, very good. Maybe it's a little bit different up here than down the south where I was at school. But anyway, you're probably correct. Who cleans up after the marathon yesterday? You can follow start to finish with plastic bottles everywhere. I would say they have a plan, and they'll be on that today, I would say. There's a lot of money in those plastic bottles too, I'd imagine. Right, 086 60 25,000. We're going to be digging into... we're going to be digging in a little bit more to the defective concrete blocks situation. On Friday, we learnt just 7% of houses were fixed since the scheme was announced. Now, that might not tell the full story, because you could read that headline and you might think, right, 7%, that's not bad. Is it full rebuilds? Well, maybe there weren't full rebuilds. We'll dig into that a little bit more with someone who's very across that whole subject after we take a break. We're joined on the programme now by a name that's been synonymous with the Defective Blocks campaign. He's stepped away somewhat from that now, but is an effective homeowner. And I suppose, Michael, really, this is the type of crisis you never truly step away from, because it's ever present.
Yeah. Morning, Greg. How you doing?
I'm doing okay.
Good. I think probably... You definitely don't get away from it when you're in the middle of rebuilding your own home. And I think, I suppose, what, you know, as a campaigner and probably one of the lead campaigners, you know, you talk hypothetically. You talk about information that you've gleaned from other affected homeowners. And if anything, it's enhanced when you go through the process yourself. And I suppose all of the shortfalls that we highlighted, Greg, the whole way through over the years... come home to roost whenever you're in the middle of it yourself. And while it wasn't a case of thinking people were overstating it during the campaign when you weren't actually in it yourself in terms of a rebuild, it definitely comes home to roost as to how real it is for everybody. And I would count my own coping skills pretty good. Blessed with a good, solid family around me. I was lucky enough to have enough money to get the rebuild up and running, which I know is not the case for a lot of people out there. So I don't feel sorry for myself, but I definitely feel angry that I'm in this position, and money that I suppose we're setting aside for retirement is now all being swallowed up and more in a rebuild again that you should never have had to do.
Yeah. Before we talk about the remediation and the percentages, 2,870 applications in 5 years. That is the tip of the iceberg. And of course, it doesn't include social housing and other buildings. Of course, they would come in through a different way. Why is the figure, do you think, still under 3,000 5 years on?
It's just the inaccessibility of the scheme and the, you know, the realisation that I came to loud and clear, and I'm absolutely adamant about this, is that that delay was by design. There's none of this here accidental in hindsight, Greg, and that's genuinely my view on it. It was designed in a way that while we had the biggest redress scheme in the land announced on one hand, the carefully created constraints ensured that there was never going to be a tsunami of applications. And that was done quite deliberately. So what they have done is they really give enough oxygen for people like myself that had enough money, although it was money that was set aside, like I say, for retirement, whatever the case may be, to go get the process going. They knew that there was going to be so many left behind that they were never going to get an avalanche of applications. And, you know, who's to say maybe when they have bled that dry and there's none of us left out there that has that bit of money to get the fund up and running, they will then go and look at it. But it seems to be it's going to be just, they're going to drag it out as long as they can. And as long as there's some applications coming through at a high level, you can say the process is working. But on the ground, we know it's not.
It would be interesting to see if there were some sort of, you know, government-managed end-to-end scheme, the likes that Sinn Féin have promised. And it's like everything, of course, you'd have to see what the situation was when any party were in power. But do you think there's a large cohort who don't have any available funding, don't have access to borrowings, that simply say, well, I can't even apply to this? Until such, I mean, there are people that probably can't even get the 500-700 quid together for the, you know, the visual assessment to even get the ball rolling. That's a fact. Like, so do you think if you would see an avalanche of applications onto this scheme, if it were more accessible?
There's no doubt in my mind about that whatsoever. And you brought up the Sinn Féin part there, Greg, and it was never political for me. At any point, it was never political. It was about given what was in power, every possible chance to go do the right thing with the guidance that we give them from the lived experiences of people. And when it became crystal clear that there was no appetite on their part whatsoever to go do that, we had to look then as to where the next biggest alternative was, and the biggest opposition party was Sinn Féin, and that was why, and the only reason why we got involved with them on this, and we created the People's Document, you'll remember that, with the four principles on there, the four P's, the property, all affected properties, because no one was guilty in this. The people, no one left behind for the same reasons. Nobody was guilty in this. The process was end-to-end, and the end-to-end reason was that you wouldn't have local contractors bogging the ironmen, which does happen here. It does happen here, right down to tradesmen. That end-to-end scheme taken on by the state would ensure that there was buying power, that wouldn't happen. It would happen at too big a scale. And then the prevention part, proper regulation or proper enforcement of regulation based on science, that would never happen again. If you think about them four P's, Greg, all them problems go away. But if you think of them four P's, that allows everybody to apply, and the state wasn't prepared to honour that. That's the bottom line.
What are the chances, though, of, you know, this scheme being constantly sort of updated and enhanced? Because, you know, the powers that be might sort of say, well, the key players have stepped away. Do you know the likes of yourself and Paddy and others that were very instrumental? And I know both of you and the rest of you still advocate, don't get me wrong. And then you see MAG sort of standing down. You know, the government might lean back and say, well, look, obviously we're doing something right, because, you know, the campaign as such has been handed over to elected councillors and a TD and not necessarily, you know, a people's movement any longer. Government ministers locally, government reps will say, well, the scheme's working, it can be constantly enhanced and blah, 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 blah. I'm not saying that's not true, but that's... So everyone has a position here, right? So where do enhancements or changes come from this? Could Sinn Féin even sort of water down their promises if there's no sort of grassroots, high-profile campaign on this? I just wonder where we go to into the future now.
That's a concern. That's an absolutely legitimate concern. Now, that said, we have an elected TD, and I'm sure Charles Ward, although there's very little correspondence with him, but I'm sure he's doing his bit down there. The four councillors that we have within the power that they've got available to them will be doing what they can here. But you're right, the people movement, I think, was what made it different. And it was, and I'll go back again to the same thing, Paddy Dever brought about the people movement, and that is missing now. And I think what happens is you've got people now getting on with stuff, and you can see there's people moving forward, but that's the people that's in that bracket like myself that had some funds to get up and running. My worry is for the people that are not in that bracket and can't get off the ground. And, like, you know, the other part too, Greg, which was really soul destroying, we, you know, we talked about the four P's, and that's utopia, that's really what we're entitled to, but the compromise position that we asked for was very doable for them, and they wouldn't even take that on. And the first, with two asks in that, one of them was the penalty-free downsizing. In other words, if you're going to give somebody a grant of 400,000 anyway, based on the size of their house, but they were 100,000 short, give them the 400,000. Allow the proper checks and balances to make sure the money went into that house, but let them go build whatever size of house they could for that 400,000. And they're not depending on a bank. So that allowed everybody into the scheme, not just the people who's in the bracket that I talked about that includes me. That was the first thing. The second one was transfer of eligibility. So if a pensioner wanted to sell their house and go and live in a wee house at the end of the village or whatever the case may be and see out their last days, sell the house, but the grant went with the house, that meant the house was worth something as opposed to nothing. Now, it shouldn't matter to the state if they're paying that money out to that address and it's the pensioner that owns it or the person that buys it, but they weren't prepared to do it.
But it became very clear to me then why.
Yeah,
but the truth is...
It's back into the same story. Greg.
Yeah,
the
I know exactly what you're
so
going to say.
In this one. Yeah. The reason that they didn't want to do it was that would cause the avalanche to happen. Everybody could then apply. It was then open and possible to everybody, and they weren't prepared to let that happen. And that was why they wouldn't let us do penalty-free downsizing or transfer of eligibility. And it's shame on them for that.
And there are some indications to that attitude in some of the reporting from the ditch as well, that sort of would sort of back that up, that the efforts were made to limit people accessing the scheme. Also, to, you know, almost one in ten, you could sort of try and spin that 7%. But how many of those are, you know, full rebuilds, and how many of those are outer leaves? How much of that 7% is going to be back on this scheme again into the future?
That's the other concern, because I don't have the latest numbers to hand, but I know percentage-wise and ratio-wise, it was like two-third outer leaf to one-third rebuild. And the science is now superseding everything that NSAI, the National Standards Authority of Ireland, have available to them. was available to them. They just haven't acknowledged it. And, you know, it's very possible that we have got the majority of that 7% that's going to be in a position with us to come back round, avail of this 40-year state-backed guarantee and go through this nightmare twice in their lifetime. And that is just morally wrong.
Yeah, and we're probably going to see with the council how the scheme might best work in the private sector if that ever gets off the ground, in terms of, you know, controlling costs with contractors and, you know, multiple bills at the same time. I don't know the ins and outs of that, but there is this issue as well. People that I speak to, they don't know what their shortfall's going to be yet. You know, they're like, well, we don't know what we're going to have to come up with. Some people have access to funds, others don't. And also the delays in receiving stage payments as well. We were speaking to a gentleman who, in a week or so, his house, his rebuild should be beginning. But the contractor says, look, I'm working on another couple of houses. It's taken forever to get the money off the local authority or through the local authority off the housing department. I can't take on another defective concrete block property because I can't bridge these gaps. Again, we're told that that's being worked on. But these are more issues that affect particularly those less resourced.
And I think that there are certainly things that could help a bad situation and make it a lot better. There definitely are. One of the things that is that, you know, this idea of a maximum six stage payments. That's why then you'll have a contractor holding out then for, you know, as big a sum as possible to make a submission. While he's holding out, what he's doing is he's working off credit to make that happen. So, for example, if it was 12 stage payments that you could get in with smaller stage payments, it allows that cash flow to flow more freely. Things like that should cost the council nothing to do other than the fact they've got maybe twice the amount of processing. But that's purely an admin task. And that's, you know, if that's the biggest problem they've got, then they're not doing too bad. I think simple things like that are still being left on the table when they could be actioned. That's where I would hope we've got our four 100% redress party councillors and the other party councillors, where common sense would dictate this can be made easier by things that cost us nothing to do other than a bit of extra admin.
Yeah. I've observed over as long as I've been sitting in this chair is it almost feels like 99% of issues are resolved or there's movement on it when the people themselves, outside of the system. You know, to be honest, we know harm to Charles Ward, but he can ask a question every other day about this and see cancers, and he'll be given a stock answer and nothing moves forward. But and that's no shade on him. It is just the way the system works. It's just the way the system works. So you can be seen as advocating, but it doesn't fundamentally do anything.
And that's my worry in it, Greg. My worry in it is that, but that people, fatigue of a campaign, you know, if you look at the heights that campaign got to, Greg, it was just never going to be sustainable to that level forever. And see if we had the people in this county that was at cabinet level pushing as hard as the people were pushing, I don't think we'd be in this problem today. But that didn't happen. That didn't happen, unfortunately. And I think someone described it before as, you know, the government approach is to, you know, let the air slowly but surely leak out of the balloon and eventually it'll come back to earth. And I think that's what they successfully did. They just wore us out.
Yeah, I think many might agree with you. All right, Michael, on a positive note, though, thankfully you did have some reserves that you were able to, that were for something else, but you were able to lean on. And you can still somewhat see the light at the end of your tunnel, which is good for you and your family, because you've given up an awful lot of yourself in the campaign, not just in dealing with this on a personal level as well. So I don't think everyone would begrudge you a move into your house, hopefully before Christmas.
Yeah, exactly, Greg. And, you know, that's what I would say to people as well. For the people that's in that branch where they can go make things happen and get the funding for it, you know, the light at the end of the tunnel is good. You know, the reality is we will have a better home than what we started out with from a fabric perspective. You know, you've got your underfloor heating, if you avail of the SEAA grants, and there are people out there, Claire Irwin and others, that'll help on all that front and give all the guidance that's needed. And, you know, you get to the stage now where you start to certainly look forward to getting back into your home, but tinged with a bit of guilt, if I'm being honest.
Survivor's guilt, is it?
Can't get there.
Almost like survivor's guilt. Is it almost like survivor's guilt, if you know what I mean?
Yeah. I think so, Greg. Yeah, and it's very, very real. And there's a lot of people out there that I'll still get phone calls every week. And I suppose every bit just gives you that sort of sense of, lucky in one way. That's why I say I don't feel sorry for myself, but I feel angry.
Yeah, but you are going to have to, and you will. You are going to have to find the space to allow yourself, especially with everything you've contributed, to enjoy your house with your family, and that's what everyone would want for everyone. Michael, thank you so very much indeed. I do appreciate your time. Michael Doherty there, who's an affected homeowner, but also one of the key faces of that campaign for a long time. Just breaking down those figures a little bit. So there have been 2,796 applications to the scheme 5 years on. 1,334 had met the damage threshold required to qualify for the grant, which is lower than I was expecting. 54 applications were refused or withdrawn, while 27 did not meet the damage threshold. Since applications to the enhanced scheme opened, there have been 164 applications in Clare, 64 in Mayo, 3 in Donegal, and of course, sorry, 3 in Sligo and the rest in Donegal. So there you go. Just a brief item before 10 with Conor Hogan, spokesperson with Irish Business Against Litter. Good morning, Conor.
Good morning.
Thank you for joining us. Right, so good news for our beaches. Let's be parochial here up in Donegal.
It's good news indeed that we do our survey of beaches and harbours around this time of year. The results are very good this time around. Our beaches and our harbours are cleaner than they've ever been. The majority are indeed clean. And the two areas that we surveyed in Donegal, Killybegs Harbour and Bundoran Beach, they are both clean. The last time we did this survey, they were both moderately littered. So they're following the positive trend nationwide. So it's really good news all round.
And is it the actual water that you check, the surrounds? You know, will it be the pier in Killybegs or the actual beach in Bundoran? How do you, so what are you looking for and where? If not specifically, I mean, generally speaking, Conor.
It would be, yes. In the case of the beach, it would be the actual beach itself, but it would also be the surrounds, like the road leading to the beach or off the beach, the car park that's serving the beach. There may be other amenities, like maybe a sauna or something like that nearby, just at the beach. So the general environs are what we cover. And in the case of Bundoran, the report from Ontashka was a glowing one, a virtual absence of litter throughout the large area. Some cigarette butts, that was the only thing we see, and there's maybe suggestion that there might be an awareness campaign conducted to advise people of how damaging cigarette butts are in the marine environment. But otherwise, a glowing report.
All right, and also in a kind of Killybegs, Connor, my apologies. Go ahead.
Just in the case of Killybegs, the infrastructure was very well presented in terms of wooden seating areas and picnic tables. Again, a virtual absence of litter, some minor food-related items, and fishing-related materials like lines and nets and ropes. But overall, an excellent report for Donegal.
Good stuff, Conor. Thank you very much indeed. Conor Hogan there, and I think particularly welcome during the summer where it's busy, so that's good to see. Right. Hi, Greg. Another side to the DCB crisis is restoring mortgageability. The banks have submitted to the NSAI in what they need for future lending. The draft standard falls short. Department of Housing needs to engage with BPFI led working group on the DCB crisis. Okay, interesting insight. And listen, we're not finished with it. So if there's anything else needs highlighting, we'll not be found wanting. News on the way. We'll be back after.